They've operated on him, but I think they're going to do another.
Of course I was worried.
And then he wrote and he said, I'm hoping to be allowed home for sick leave in a month. He'd had shrapnel through the leg. He said, things are healing up nicely. He says, and I can rest my leg at home as well in quarters as I can in a hospital bed. So they signed him, and he came up. And in the taxi, he came up from Kalka. I went down in the evening. He used to come up in the morning with the mail and any passengers, and then go down at 6 o'clock at night with the passengers for the train. And that's what we did. And he fixed a hotel for me to go and see him.
This was your husband?
Yes.
Who came back? Yes. Yes. That must have been quite a meeting.
It was. It was a long time before he was fit. He had to have plastic surgery. Well, he kept saying, I can't understand it. He said, you've fixed me up this side, but he said, I've got awful earache and toothache this side. So the matron, she says, you're very lucky, Captain Bootlin. She says, there's a hospital convoy on its way up from Bombay. They're coming up country now. She says, and we're going to get some of the dental people. We've appealed for help. And she said, the man is very good. He's been a dental surgeon to the Queen. To the King. That was it, to the King. And when he came, and he said to his entourage, he said, look, I want this patient's from ear to ear. He wanted
an x-ray.
X-rays. He said, I want x-rays from ear to ear, and then we'll know where we are. And that afternoon he came to Alan and he said, we found out the trouble. He says, your jaw's broken the other side. So he said, we've decided we're going to put your lower jaw in a splint, and he says the hunt's on now for florins. The old-fashioned florin has more silver in it than thing, and we can melt it down, extract the silver. He says, I only dare put a silver splint on. And he says, when we've got enough, we'll operate. And they did. He says, once that's fixed, you can go on leave. So he did, and he had a month's leave, and it was wonderful.
Did he have to go back into the war after that?
He did, but not fighting, no. He was given jobs, various light jobs, and then eventually, Pat was 6 months old, we came back to England. But
before the end of the war, was that? You came back? Yes. Were you there at the time of the battle for Imphal, when there was a real worry of the Japanese invading?
Yes, yes, yes. Kelly Goldthorpe was mixed up in that. And he said they fought over a tennis court. They were so near, backwards and forwards, he says, about the length of a tennis court. But they drove the Japs back.
Were you really worried in India that they would invade? Was there a real fear?
Well, the Indians got the breeze up then. And a lot of Indian soldiers, they went over to the Japanese.
Did you know about that at the time?
Yes, yes.
What?
But it didn't last long. Did you see the jewel in the crown?
That yes. Yes. You heard about that, though, did you, while you were there, about the INA? The
Indian National Army.
And Bose, his broadcasts.
Yes, I tell you, it used to be written on Brits go home on thing. So we knew not to wander off on our own to the bazaar.
Would you have been there during the very big Bengal famine as well? Do you remember that?
I do indeed. Because one of our friends in Sabatu, he'd been in this famine. And he said, when we heard of all these hungry hordes coming down the plain to seek food and things like that, he said, we set to, we baked a lot of fresh bread. He said, we made bully beef sandwiches, lashings of tea, and one thing and another. He says, when they came, they fell on these sandwiches and they couldn't eat enough that. He says, then it went round. Someone blew the gap that they'd eaten beef. Well, that's against their religion. So he says, we had men putting the fingers down the throat to heave up and bring it all back again. He said, the damn fools, he said, life is more precious than things. He said, I could eat anything rather than starve to death. But a lot didn't. Mm. A lot were thankful. Oh, I remember him telling us, he'd come on leave and told us about it.
Would that have affected you at all, the famine? You know, your
yes. We're never short. No, the army looked after us well. But
did you know about Gandhi and the Quit India as well?
Yes.
What were you hearing about that?
Well, we knew that Gandhi was a peaceful man, but he was a stubborn man too. And I've often thought how good Mrs. Gandhi was. No relation, really. But she brought modern living to India, and she was assassinated for it. She was broken the creed and one thing and another.
Indira Gandhi, yes.
Yes, she was a wonderful woman. She had a big estate, like a council estate made. And for the first time, the Indians had a toilet indoor, well, a toilet outside. But
Is this you in the time you were there? During your time?
No.
I better not go into that because it rather takes us away. Although, as you say, it's another story. So you came home. What date would that have been?
We came home September 1944 when Pat was 6 months old and Ian was 10 and a half.
How did you journey?
Well, it was a liner. It was a very luxurious liner, really. But I was dismayed. When we got on board, Alan saw me to my the room. And then he says, I'm going to take Ian up to his cabin. I said, can't he be with me? No, I'm sorry. He said, you've got a two-berth cabin, and until Portside, you can have both. But he said, at Portside, there's a colonial nursing sister who's been discharged on health grounds, and she'll occupy the top bunk. So we did that. But Ian had to go on another other side of the ship. And he was put in there with some young boys. He was the youngest. I think the eldest was about 15. And Alan tipped the steward. He says, look, boys get up to all kinds of tricks and things. And will you keep an eye on them? He says, and let me know if there's any going on. But they were all right.
Was there any threat from submarines?
Yes. The thing was, Alan came to me the next day. He says, guess who's on board? So I said, I've no idea. He says, the Niblets. That was Mrs. Niblet that lost that baby in Mamie, you know, through the Japanese air raid. He said, and she's pregnant again. He says, and they're thrilled to bits. Oh, I said, I hope all goes well. And then the next day, we ran into a monsoon squall. And I was terribly sick. Although I was feeding the baby, I was sick. And next morning, we'd gone into calmer waters. I said to Alan, can I go and see the doctor, please? I said, her little bottom is red raw. I said, I've been so sick that I think I have upset the monk. Yes, he says, I'll go and find out now. When I came back, he says, I made an appointment for 9:30. And it was a captain in the RAMC, a lady doctor. And she said, you know what's happened? She says, were you sick yesterday? Oh, I says, I was. I felt terrible. She says, well, you've curdled your milk. You're feeding your baby and you've curdled your milk. So she's the only thing to do, keep on feeding her and drink lots and lots of water. Lots of water. She's now give you some cream for her bottom. And she gave me a huge 2-pound jar of the zinc and castor oil, which lasted for months, and I passed it on to someone else. But Alan came to me 2 days later. He said, I'm sorry, Bess, but he says, Mrs. Niblett's had another miscarriage. He says, and oh, they are upset. I says, well, I won't go and see her. I couldn't anyway leave the baby and that. But when we went on our first boat drill, and they said, you must have your life belts on. So I said to the steward, where's my life belt for the baby? He said, you don't have one, madam. He said, there's none allowed for babies in arms. If you're torpedoed, she'll float, the bundle floats ever so far before she sinks. So he says, there's plenty of time to pick her up when you do. And I, oh dear, that alarm bells rang. Well, just before we got to Gibraltar, the alarm went off. And I went straight as instructed, put my belt on, picked up the baby, grabbed my handbag and went upstairs to the boat deck. And mothers with babies, young children, they were given priority. We were on a special deck, boat deck that would go into the boats first. But we sat there and I clutched my baby and I thought, now, is going to talk about saying your prayers. And then all of a sudden, the all clear. They dropped ash cans, as they called them. The things that went overboard, and far enough, these ash cans were going off. And finally, the all clear went. They said it must have scared them off, because there was no sign of any, and that was fine.
Did you call into Gibraltar?
No. Was that? No, we didn't go into Gibraltar. We went straight through the Bay of Biscay home, and. Fortunately, September, it was pretty mild, so...
Where did you dock?
Up in Scotland. What was the name of it?
Not to worry.
Near Glasgow.
What was it like being back in Britain? You came back at a bad time, didn't you?
Oh, yes. But the thing was that when we were on the train going from Glasgow to us. Destination was, we're on the train for York. Oh, we had to change at Sheffield, that's right. When we came into one station, there was a cheer going on. And so we stopped at the platform. And I said, open the window. And Alan said, what's all the noise? He said, what are they cheering for? He said, and it was the porter. He says, it's the first night we've been able to have lights on in the station. Mind you, they were shaded, but he says, we've been walking around with lamps and torches and things, but this is the all clear's gone for us to have half light, and we could see things, and it was great. And he says, you'll always remember you came back the first night of the lights up, when the lights go on again. And we went to Sheffield, we to get out at Sheffield. The train was going on further south, but we for the north had to get out at Sheffield. Was it finished? And, excuse me, we made friends with a major and his wife, they've no children, and they've been on the boat with us, although we hadn't met before. But the men went off with him to go and find, it was about 1 in the morning, to see if they could find some tea or something. And they went, and there was a WVS store, and Alan came back, and he was cross. I said, "What's wrong?" He says, "Well, there's an old biddy on the platform, on the stall, dishing tea out." He said that she said she'd give Ian a drink, because he was with us, but no way could we take any tea away. He says, "Look, we'll return the cups." He said, "I'll give you a deposit of £5 for it." "No, we're not allowed," he said, and she stuck an egg out. She said, "No, no tea can be served. It must be drunk here." He says, "But I've got a wife that's feeding a baby 6 months. Sorry, can't help." Well, we're all talking outside the ladies' toilet on the station.